Brahma's conversation with Narada Muni. And Narada Muni, again, this is a repetition of a conversation between Sukadeva Goswami is explaining this to Maharaj Prickett, and Suta Goswami is repeating this, what he has heard while listening to Sukadeva. He's repeating that to the sages of Namasharanya. So what are they? They're repeating how Narada Muni, what's going on? Is it still making a funny noise? It's making soothing sounds now. So Narada Muni has asked questions to Lord Brahma. These questions have to do with the creation of the universe. Because Narada Muni has seen the potency of Brahma, his father, and more or less he has understood how one can be bewildered by watching Lord Brahma's actions, because he appears to be all-powerful within the material world. So he has asked questions which mostly have to do with the creation of the material world. Could you maybe turn this down a little bit and maybe let some air in? The creation of the material world. And Brahma has answered Narada. He's begun to answer him by saying that no, it is not me, Brahma, who is the ultimate creator of this world. In the second verse of this chapter, Narada Muni has asked, please, my dear father, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. And the answer to this question was given in the verse that we heard yesterday, the 13th verse, this Vilajjamanaya Yasya Stanam Iksha Pate Muya Vamohita Vikatante Mamaham Iti Durdhya. The answer was, as to the symptoms of the, what is the symptom of this manifest world? It is that the illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. So the Lord cannot, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence over the Lord himself. But what is the effect of the illusory energy on the living entities? The living entities become bewildered by the illusory energy. And what is the symptom of the living entity bewildered by the living by the illusory energy? They always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine, mamaham iti manyate. This is the prime symptom of bewilderment, because the bewilderment begins with the identification of the body. And this is the prime symptom of the living entities, of the material world itself. And that's the answer to the second question, or the question that Narada asked. Describe the symptoms of this manifest world. Now, in the one of the other questions will be answered next. In text 7, the question was asked, which we have been speaking of already, where Narada said, after seeing you, my dear Lord Brahma, you act so powerfully, practically speaking, you appear to be like a spider, in the sense that the spider manifests his web by his own potency. He doesn't take ingredients from anywhere else, just from his saliva he manifests his web. And then he takes that web again within himself. So Narada has described Brahma in that way, more or less, as the self-sufficient creator, not needing any energy from anywhere. But, Narada has said, still we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you. Why? Because Narada has heard about Brahma's performance of austerities. So how is it that you're performing austerities to please someone unless there is someone higher than you who you're getting your power to create from? So Brahma begins to answer that question in the verse we begin today, and he says that the five elementary ingredients of creation, this is the 14th text, the interaction, so there's Bhumira Bhonalo Vayu, there's earth, water, fire, air, and ether. The five elementary ingredients of creation, the interactions thereof, how they interact, set up by eternal time, because that is the potency of time. It is stirring. It is like a huge spoon in the pot of the material ingredients, and it's stirring and making the interactions between the ingredients of the material world occur. So there's the five elements put into the soup of the material existence, and it is stirred by material time, making interactions. And the intuitions or nature of the individual living beings, that means their swabhava, the jiva's swabhava, their actual natures, which are also in there. And all the differentiated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead, the natures of the living being, all these things, all the ingredients in the material world, they are parts, differentiated, different parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead. And in truth, there is no other value in them. So what Brahma is saying, that in answer to your question as to whether there is something higher than me, and Brahma is going to continue answering that question up to text 20 and explaining, yes, there is definitely someone higher than me who I'm getting my power from. But here he begins to say that this material world and all the ingredients of the material world, including time, which makes everything move from creation to maintenance and ultimately to destruction, all these things are part of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva. And unless they are seen in relationship to the Lord, there's no value in them, and there is no value in that realization that you have as things as separate from the Lord, because these are affected by the illusory energy. So that's the first part of Brahma's answer. Yes, there is nothing beyond the Lord, and everything in this world is a creation, is connected, is a part and parcel of the Lord and His energy. So Sridhar Swami has commented on this verse, explaining that Brahma answered one of Narada's questions, 257, the one, who is there anyone higher than you, saying, the Lord is beyond him, Brahma. And now Brahma says that all in existence is part of the energy. The living entity is known as the marginal potency of the Lord. The living entity, in his conditioned state and his liberated state, is also part of the Lord. He's not the Lord, but he's part of the Lord. So he's the marginal potency of the Lord, but in all circumstances, neither the material ingredients, nor the spiritual parts and parcels, the material world or the living entities, neither of them are independent of the personality of Godhead, Lord Vasudeva. For all things, whether products of the external, internal, or marginal potency of the Lord, are simply displays of the same effulgence, meaning the Brahma Jyoti of the Lord, just as light, heat, and smoke are displays of fire. None of them are separate from the fire. all of them combined together to be called fire. Similarly, all phenomenal manifestations, as well as the effulgence of the body of Vasudeva, the Brahma Jyoti, are his impersonal feature, whereas he eternally exists in his transcendental form called Satchitananda Vigraha, distinct from all conceptions of the material ingredients mentioned above. So gradually, Lord Brahma is going to give us a complete description of who Krishna is. And he's beginning this description of Krishna by explaining that everything that we see in the material world is connected to Krishna, and there is no value. It is only illusion to see things as separate from Krishna. Bhumira ponalo vayu kamra buddha evacha hankaratiya me bhina prakritim astada apariyam idastvanam prakritim bidi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho daryate. What's the first word in that? Yayidam jagat. So all the material world is a creation, is a combination of these two energies of Krishna, the external energy and the marginal energy, the living entity. And in the spiritual world, which is the internal energy, that is where Krishna himself exists in his Satchitananda form. And in the material world, he exists in its impersonal form, mama angsa tejo sambhava. So to continue explaining how he himself, Brahma, is not the supreme creator, but again it is Lord Vasudeva, Krishna, Lord Narayan, who is the supreme creator, he speaks the next two verses, 15 and 16.
Narayana para veda deva narayana angaja narayana para loka narayana para maka narayana para yoga narayana param tapa narayana param jnanam narayanam paragati.
The Vedic literature, so the Lord is everything. And the Vedic literatures are made by and are meant for the Supreme Lord. So he's explaining now how everything is in relationship to Narayan. And Srila Sridhar Swami explains that Narayana, as the source of the scriptures, it shows that he is omniscient, because the scriptures explain about everything in this world. So the one who creates the scriptures must know everything, and therefore he is omniscient. The demigods are also meant for serving the Lord as parts of his body. And Srila Jiva Goswami has said that the demigods are worshipable because they are part of his body, part of the body of his universal form. That's what makes them worshipable, because they too have a connection with Krishna, and they are meant for serving the Lord as parts of his body. The different planets are also meant for the sake of the Lord, and different sacrifices are performed just to please him. All different types of meditation, this is text 16, or mysticism, they are meant for realizing Narayan. All austerities are aimed at achieving Narayan. Culture of transcendental knowledge is for getting a glimpse of Narayan, and ultimately salvation is entering into the kingdom of Narayan. So it can be asked after describing the glories, or hinting at the glories of Lord Narayan, how everything is meant for his service and to realize him, and he is the source of everything. So one can ask, why then and how is Lord Brahma doing what he's doing in the creation of the world? So Sridhar Swami says that the next verse, text 17, is an answer to that question. So how and why is Lord Brahma doing what he's doing? So now he's saying he's putting himself in relationship to the Lord also. And he says, inspired by him only, I discover what is already created by him, Narayan, under his vision as the all-pervading super soul. And I am also created by him only. So here, in these verses, up to text 20, Lord Brahma is defining the supreme creator, the supreme power of this world, the one who is above him. And then in text 21, until the end of the chapter, he's going to describe the creation in answer to Narada Muni's questions, which are also the questions of, basically the questions of Maharaj Prakrit. Prabhupada explains in the purport. He explains in the purport because the point of secondary creator. So he says that there are two types of living entities. This is also explained in the Bhagavad Gita, that there is the Supreme Lord and then there are the living entities. There is not one. We can never be God. There are two types of living entities. The Lord inspires the individual soul to create what is already created by the Lord. And by the goodwill of the Lord, a discoverer of something in the world is credited as the discoverer. It is said that Columbus discovered the Western Hemisphere, but actually the tract of land was not created by Columbus. The vast tract of land was already there by the omnipotency of the Supreme Lord, and Columbus, by dint of his past service unto the Lord, was blessed with the credit of discovering America. Similarly, no one can create anything without the sanction of the Lord, since everyone sees according to his ability. This ability is also awarded by the Lord according to one's willingness to render service unto the Lord. One must therefore be voluntarily willing to render service unto the Lord, and thus the Lord will empower the doer in proportion to his surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Lord Brahma is a great devotee of the Lord. Therefore, he has been empowered or inspired by the Lord to create such a universe as the one manifest before us. So this is very interesting, how the living entity's vision of reality and his ability is a direct gift from Krishna according to his piety. According to the person's piety, his purity, and his desires, certainly his desires are created according to his purity. Because like a pig, for example, what is he desiring? So he's so covered. And then, on the other hand, a person who is a gourmet, who has very exquisitely refined taste buds in the matter of food, what is he desiring? So it has to do, one's desires have to do with one's purity. And in reciprocation with that purity, Krishna awards a particular mentality that gives one a gross body. And between the mind and the gross body, the living entity begins to desire just according. And he thinks that his desires are exactly true. And this is the nature. He sees his vision of life as reality. Whatever his vision is, he sees one thing is good, he sees another thing is bad, and he thinks that's reality. Two people may look at the very same thing and one finds it abominable and another person finds it is so attractive. What is the difference? The thing that they're seeing is the same. But how did they get such vastly different mentalities? It is Krishna reciprocating. He's awarding a particular vision, a particular consciousness. to the living entity. He is not, the living entity is not God. But in that illusion with the consciousness that he's been awarded by Krishna, which is after all illusion, because it is not the complete picture of reality, only Krishna has that. So with that consciousness, which is a compression of the soul's consciousness, a restriction of the soul's consciousness, with that which has been given by Krishna, he is thinking that this is reality and I am the controller of that reality and it is meant for my enjoyment. That is called the action of Maya. Under the control of Krishna, Maya presents the living entity with a particular consciousness of reality. So that shows just the fact that there are so many different living entities and they each have a different concept of reality. So that means that there is someone, a controller, who is awarding different consciousnesses to living entity. And it's not the living entities who are the supreme, obviously. So after explaining this, how Lord Brahma, as the creator, just like comparing him to Christopher Columbus, who discovered America, just seeing things or discovering things that are already created by the Lord. It is Krishna's creation. And when the living entity creates something, he is called the secondary creator. He is creating what's already been created. Then, Prabhupada explains in the purport Arjuna's position. He first gives the example of Brahma, and then he gives the example of Arjuna, who Krishna personally requested him to kill all the opposing soldiers on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And Krishna asked him to be an instrument, because Krishna wanted that done. And this request to make our desires, to make our consciousness harmonious with Krishna's desires, is actually the request of Krishna to all living entities. Sarvadamam pratyaja mamekam sharanam braja. When we act in this world based on Krishna consciousness, making our desires one with Krishna's desire, with great affection, wishing to serve him, then all our actions are free from reaction. And on the other hand, if we don't act in that way, if we act on our own, then everything we do entangles us further in the material energy. So Prabhupada explains at the end of this purport. In the Vedic writings, such as the Katha Upanishad, the Lord is described as the Sarva Bhuta Antaratma, or the personality of Godhead, who resides in everyone's body and who directs everything for one who is a soul surrendered to him. Those who are not surrendered souls, in other words, those who have independent desires, they are put under the care of the material nature. Therefore, they are allowed to do things on their own account and suffer the consequences themselves. Devotees like Brahma and Arjuna do not do anything on their own account. But as fully surrendered souls, they always await indications from the Lord. Therefore, they attempt to do something which appears very wonderful to ordinary vision. One of the Lord's names is a Rukram, or one whose actions are very wonderful and are beyond the imagination of the living being. So the action of his devotees sometimes appears very wonderful due to the direction of the Lord. So the devotee is acting, Krishna is doing it through his devotee, whose desire has become one with Krishna's desire. Like a small boy who is trying to lift weights, some heavy weights, and his father is doing the actual work of lifting the weight. So similarly, when the devotee does something wonderful in this world, it is actually Krishna who is doing it. the devotee has made his desire one with Krishna, one to please God. So this is the position. Therefore, the devotees can do such wonderful things. So beginning from Brahma, the topmost intelligent living being within this universe, down to the smallest ant, every living entity's intelligence is overseen by the Lord in His transcendental position as the witness of all action. This is Super Soul. Krishna explains this in the Bhagavad Gita, that He is giving the intelligence. All living entities reciprocating the desires of the living entity. The subtle presence of the Lord is felt by the intelligent man who studies the psychic effects of making people feel. So this is, again, this is Prabhupada's comment on Brahma saying that I, in my creation, this material world, have discovered, I've done things that are secondary creation. Done under the Lord's vision, and He is the Super Soul. Because Krishna is Upadrashta. He is the overseer. So next, text 18 and 19 again describes more about the difference between the Lord and the individual soul. Because again, here Brahma is establishing that it is Narayana. We are not the supreme. He is saying, I am not the supreme. But it is Krishna who is supreme. He's establishing that first. And now he's beginning to explain the answer to the question that was one of Maharaj Prickett's questions. How is it that Krishna works in the material world? Come in contact, as we heard yesterday, the example that Prabhupada said that Krishna is not like in the creation of the world. He's not like a blacksmith who pounds the material world on his own by the strength of his muscles. He is the one pounding the material world into a shape. No, Krishna is not like that. He does everything through his energies. So what energies does Krishna use to control, to create, to maintain and destroy the world? He explains this in these two verses, 18 and 19. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. So this point is something that we are exposed to again and again in these beginning parts of the Bhagavatam. And it is essential for us to deeply assimilate this information that Krishna's form is transcendental to all material qualities. Practically speaking, in the third canto, we will see an incarnation of the Lord, the first incarnation of the Lord, and that is Varahadev. When he comes up and he rescues the earth from its place that's fallen into the ocean. With his tusks, he goes down into a filthy place, and a hog, a boar, is considered a low, low and filthy animal. But when the Lord is in the form of a boar, the Brahmins, we will see that the Brahmins will offer the Vedic hymns to him, even though he's in the form of a boar. Because whatever form Krishna is in, it is always Satchidananda. It is always completely spiritual. So we have to deeply assimilate this point. Why? Especially because the Bhagavatam is going to reveal in the 10th canto about Krishna. And it is hard for the living entity to say that, oh, how is it possible that God comes in the form of a hog? But when Krishna comes in the form of a boar, he does something so huge, he lifts the entire earth, so one can, in one sense, easily understand that no ordinary hog can do this. This is something that only God can do. But more difficult then understanding that, those type of activities of Krishna, that everything he does in whatever body he, whatever form he is accepting, is transcendental, is in the 10th canto when he takes the, when he's in his original form of Krishna, and he looks just like an ordinary boy, very, very, very beautiful, but playing like a cowherd boy, walking around without shoes, that is more difficult to understand that this is God. Whatever Krishna does, whether he's in the form of a huge boar, or he's in the form of a half lion, half man, and the most difficult to understand, when he's in the form of a little boy. And we'll hear in a few moments how Lord Brahma himself had trouble. He knew clearly that Narayan, he's saying here, that Narayan is his master. But still, this form of Krishna is so hard to understand that when he saw Krishna, he himself saw Krishna, it was so hard for him to accept that this little boy is my master, Narayan. And actually, we'll read that now, that Lord Brahma says in the 10th canto, in the 14th chapter, in the 14th verse, he says, Narayanastam nahi sarvadehinam admas yadi shakira lokasakshi Narayano angam narabu jalayana tachapi satyam natavaiva maya. Now this verse of Lord Brahma's is one of the most important verses in the entirety of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because this verse establishes even for the members of the Madhva Sampradaya that it is not Narayan who is supreme ultimately, it is Krishna who is supreme. So this verse says, Lord Brahma himself saying to Krishna, are you not the original Narayan? You are the original Narayan. You are the O Supreme Controller. Since you are the soul of every embodied being and the eternal witness of all created realms, indeed, Lord Narayan is your expansion. And he is called Narayana because he is the generating source of the primeval water of the universe. He is real, not a product of your illusory maya. Here's Prabhupada's purport where he tells the story. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, oh, this isn't Prabhupada's purport, this is of the other translators, Prabhupada's disciples. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 2, text 30, Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows, because Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj quotes this verse in showing how Krishna is the Lord. So here's Prabhupada's purport to that verse. This statement was spoken by Lord Brahma in his prayers to Lord Krishna after the Lord defeated him by displaying his mystic powers. Brahma had tried to test Lord Krishna to see if he was really the Supreme Personality of Godhead playing as a cowherd boy. Brahma stole all the other boys and their cows from the pasturing ground. But when he returned to the pastures, he saw that all the boys and the cows were still there, for Lord Krishna had created them all again. When Brahma saw this mystic power of Lord Krishna, he admitted defeat and offered prayers to the Lord, addressing him as the proprietor and seer of everything in the creation, and as the supersoul who is also within every living entity and who is dear to all. Lord Krishna is Narayan, the father of Brahma, because Lord Krishna's plenary expansion, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, after placing himself on the Garbha ocean, created Brahma from his own body. Mahavishnu is the causal ocean, is in the causal ocean, and Kiradakshay Vishnu, the supersoul, is in everyone's heart. They are also transcendental expansions of the Supreme Truth. End of Prabhupada's purport. In his commentary on this verse, Srila Sanatana Goswami has elaborately explained the expansions of the Vishnu or Narayan incarnations from the original form of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. The essence is that although Lord Brahma was born from Lord Narayan, Brahma now understood that Narayan is himself a mere expansion of the original personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna. So how difficult it is to understand Lord Krishna. Brahma himself could not accept that this boy playing, herding the cows, playing his flute, bugling his buffalo horn, how is it possible that this boy smeared with the minerals and the pigments of Braja, with a peacock feather in his head and leaves and flowers and decorating his hair? How is it possible that he is the controller of the universe? He is the one who is the master. He is the one who is universes come from his skin holes. Even Brahma couldn't understand this. How is it possible? So he wanted a test. So he took away all Krishna's cowherd boys, he put them in a cave, and he came back and saw they were still there. And he himself became bewildered. And then Krishna began to exhibit thousands, all the boys that he and cows. He showed Brahma that these are actually only his expansions. And they turned into Vishnu forms. And Lord Brahma became shocked, amazed, bewildered. And he said, there is so much. He said to Krishna, even though you are just a little boy, there is so much difference between your form, the potency of your form, and the potency of my form. It is inestimable. And then he said, you are the origin of Lord Narayan, who is my father. I'm born out of the navel of Gobindaksha Vishnu, who is Lord Narayan, and you, and he is just an expansion of you. So even Lord Brahma gets bewildered. So the Supreme Lord, so this point that the Lord, whatever form he is in, he is completely transcendental. We should not limit his potency as we would limit the potency of an ordinary person in that form. So the Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. He's capable of doing anything and everything. This is Krishna. Yet for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy, he accepts the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. This is how Krishna deals with the material world, through his external energy. And he empowers the Lord Shiva to deal with the mode of ignorance, Lord Brahma to carry, to personify the creative energy of passion, and Lord Vishnu himself controls the mode of goodness. In text 19, these three modes of material nature being further manifested as matter, this is how it manifests further. Now this is sort of the preamble to the creation, and in the next section he's going to explain, Lord Brahma is going to explain the creation itself. It's further, these three modes of material nature are further manifest as matter, knowledge, and activities. So this is described also in the third canto. There are three separate chapters in the third canto that describe the creation, described three times, because it's important for us to understand the creation in the sense, at least in the sense, that we understand that the origin of creation is the Lord. And this is how he works the creation. So there's first false ego, and it's going to be explained later. And then when false ego combines with the three modes of material nature, when it combines with ignorance, it creates matter. When it combines with goodness, it creates knowledge. And when the false ego combines with passion, it creates activities. So this is the further manifestations of the three modes. So these things, these manifestations of the modes of material nature, put the eternally transcendental living entity under the conditions of cause and effect. We are transcendental, but we become controlled by this and make him responsible for such activities. It's very interesting. Because the living entity is simultaneously, he's controlled by these things, but yet he is responsible for the reactions of all he does. Just see. He's controlled, he's practically forced to do things, but yet he's responsible for what he does even though he's forced to do them. So it doesn't seem fair in one sense. If you're forced to do it, why should you get the reaction? Because the part of us that is responsible is this deep-seated false ego which desires that Krishna bhule se jivanadi bahi mukh. We turn our back on Krishna and we desire to enjoy this material energy because we desire to do things on our own, separate from Krishna, not like Lord Brahma, not like Arjuna. We desire to grasp that material energy and get pleasure from it. That places us under the control, and that desire limits and compresses our consciousness. And that desire to squeeze pleasure from the material world to be independent of Krishna places us squarely under the control of the external energy, and it forces us to take the reactions to everything we do. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Because they are between the internal and external potencies, the eternally transcendental living entities are called the marginal potency of the Lord. Factually, the living entities are not meant to be so conditioned by the material energy. But due to their being affected by the false sense of lording it over the material energy, this is the root of the problem, the false ego. Because of this desire, they come under the influence of such potency and thus become conditioned, controlled by the three modes of material nature. The external energy of the Lord covers up the pure knowledge of the living entity, the living entities eternally existing with him. But the covering is so constant that it appears that the conditioned soul is eternally ignorant. Such is the wonderful action of Maya, or external energy, manifested as if materially produced. By the covering power of the material energy, the material scientist cannot look beyond the material causes. So the consciousness of the living entity is so deeply controlled, and yet we don't know we're controlled, and we think that what we see is reality. Even though time and time again we see that what we see is not reality. This is going to be explained a little further. We're controlled, our consciousness. Controlled means it's compressed, because the actual consciousness of the soul is eternal and with Krishna. We have a loving relationship with Krishna, but it's compressed and controlled in that way. And yet we see that as reality. Possibly a good example of this is how, say, a boy, a young boy, sees a woman. Just sees them out of the corner of his eye, or vice versa. So the first impression is that this woman is so beautiful. Or the woman sees a man. Oh, it's like he's something so wonderful. So you can keep that impression. It's practically a sparkle, an effulgence that comes from them, really. But when you get to know the person and you look at them closely, and you see that they're not like you had thought at all. Now, what gives you that illusion? That's actually the work of the demigods. This is Daiviyesha Gunamayi Mama Maya Duratiya. The demigods are so powerful, and we're not even, we think they don't exist, but they reflect with their energy. The energy of love They reflect that on this person. And then when we look at the person, we don't see the person. We see the energy of the demigods. We see Lakshmi Devi. Basically, we're catching some of Lakshmi Devi or Durga Devi, or who is beautiful. The demigoddess in charge of beautiful women, or when the girl looks at the man, she sees some great powerful hero like that. And then when she gets to know him, it's something completely different. And then, oh, if I would have known you were like this, you know. And he takes out his false teeth, and you know. So we're actually illusioned at all the time. This is called Adidaivaka. We're under the control of the demigods. We're under the control of this body, Prabhupada explains it in the purport. And we're under the control of the senses, the conditioned senses. And yet, when we see that beautiful figure, we're thinking, yes, she is beautiful. That's called illusion. And what is the cause of it again? What is the cause of the covering up reality? It's our desire, the false sense of lording it over the material energy. As soon as one wants to enjoy, then the demigods reflect their power in different objects, making them seem enjoyable. You're thinking, oh, only if I have that car, then I'll be happy. And then you get the car. But for 15 minutes or 20 minutes, you know, there's a thrill in it. And then suddenly the glitter. Has miraculously disappeared when you're dealing with the object instead of the illusion. And what traps us into that is that desire to enjoy it. When that is gone, then there's no more illusion in the material world. And the advertisers take full advantage of this by saying, okay, so you've tried so many things and you have not been happy, but just try this new one. And we fall for it because of our desire to enjoy the lorded over the material energy. And if we remove that and take on the mood of service as Brahma and Arjuna had, then there are no reactions of the material energy anymore, and we're out of illusion. So the living entities come under the influence of such potency and become conditioned, controlled by the three modes of material nature. And they are whipping us and beating us and forcing us to think this is wonderful and then think that's wonderful and let me go to sleep and let me take that intoxication and let me go to this movie. Whipping us, whipping, practically torturing the living entities. So this external energy of the Lord covers up His pure knowledge of His eternally existing relationship with Krishna. But the covering is so constant that it appears that the conditioned soul is eternally ignorant. Such is the wonderful action of Maya. All the external energy manifests as if materially produced, but it's actually coming from Krishna, Daivyesha Gunamayi. By the covering power of the material energy, the material scientists, because their vision is curtailed, their consciousness is compressed, they cannot look beyond the material causes. They cannot see what is going on. But factually, behind the material manifestation, there are Adibhuta, Adiatma, and Adidaiva actions, which the conditioned soul and the mode of ignorance cannot see. We cannot see how we're being controlled at every step and manipulated by illusion. So Brahma is explaining this to Narada. And then the last point in text 20, in his explanation of who the supreme controller and the supreme cause beyond him is. And actually, when you think about it, that the female is attracted to the male form, and the male is attracted to the female form. But when that form is analyzed, it's just blood, it's just mucus, it's just bones and marrow, and it's in different, it's in a particular form, it's in a particular shape. There's nothing inherently attractive about it. But because it's empowered by the external energy, therefore it becomes all attractive in the material world, but there's nothing inherently attractive about it. It's a particular form, but what is attractive about that form? There's nothing inherently attractive about it, but because it's empowered by the external energy, by Maya, therefore the living entity, because its desire to enjoy, becomes sucked in to that illusion that this is wonderful, and he embraces Maya. He's actually embracing Maya. That's actually the point. When we grasp, try to enjoy the material energy, we're embracing Maya. We're not embracing the material energy, we're embracing Maya, and we're caught. So that is the difference between the living entity and the Lord, is that the external energy is coming from the Lord, and he is the controller of the external energy, and the living entities are being controlled by the external energy. The Lord is never controlled by it. So therefore, in text 20, completing his description of the Lord, Lord Brahma says, O Brahmana Narada, the superseer, the transcendental Lord, is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entity. So as long as one has this mood of enjoying, he cannot see Krishna because his consciousness is compressed by the illusory energy. Because Krishna is beyond, the transcendental Lord is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the above mentioned three modes of nature. But he, the Lord, the living entity is under these modes, but the Lord is the controller of everyone, even including me. And Srila Sridhar Swami comments in this connection that Narayana subdues illusion. He controls it. Thus the Lord can remove the living entity's illusion. Daivyesha gunamayi mama maya duratiya mamevate papanyante mayam etam tarantite. So if one, this illusory energy is so sticky that just once we touch it, we're completely entangled in it. And only Krishna is powerful enough to remove it. And when does he do that? When the living entity gives up his desire to enjoy and squeeze that material energy, his independent desire, and he just throws himself at Krishna's feet and says, please, te ayi nanda tanuja kinkaram, that, oh, son of Nanda Maharaj, somehow or another, this is even Mahaprabhu, he doesn't say how we got into the material world. He says, somehow or another, I have fallen into this material world, but please place me. Get me out of here. Please place me as one of the atoms of your lotus feet. Ayi, oh, ayi nanda tanuja kinkara, I am your servant. Oh, Krishna, I am your eternal servant. Mahaprabhu takes that position, your kinkara. Somehow or another, I have gotten entangled in this sticky, messy material energy which compresses my consciousness and brings me death and disease and frustrates me at every step. Please get me out. Let me place me again as your servant. So after, we'll just read one more verse. After describing the creation, or excuse me, the creator, now from here, from text 21 to the end of the chapter, I think it ends in possibly text 42, Lord Brahma is going to describe how the creator creates and what he does in making the material world. We'll just read this one verse. Because it was essential that we understand the Creator first, because the creation exists on the energy of the Creator. So now he's going to begin his description of the creation. You have to describe the Creator. So he says, the Lord, who is the controller of all energies, that's been established, thus creates by his own potency eternal time, the fate of the living entities, their karma, and their particular natures for which they were created, and he again merges them independently. So he brings it all out. How powerful is the Lord? And then he merges them, brings them all back into his body, and then he brings it out. Bhuta grama saivayam bhutva bhutva praliyate. Again and again he manifests the material world, and then he absorbs it. These are the questions that Narada asked, and this is the questions that Maharaj Prickett asked. Explain how the Lord engages in the creation, the maintenance, and the destruction of the material world. So now he's going to explain this. And in the purport, Prabhupada just gives an overview of the creation of the entire thing. And as it will begin with Karana Dakshai Vishnu, who is an expansion of Krishna. Krishna himself does not engage in this work. His business is in Goloka Vrindavan, but through the expansions of his expansions, Krishna deals with the material world. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
So we want to get out by our own power also, trusting our own intelligence, trusting our own abilities. So that we have to get crushed until we give that up, so we can truly chant and call out to Krishna to help us, because only Krishna can do it. We can't do it by ourselves. So this is part of the process. And it's like when one is a very, very new devotee, when he comes to Krishna consciousness, he sees it like he sees his first new car or something, you know, with the same glitter. And then after he's practicing for a while, that glitter fades too, because he's going there in an illusion that, oh, it's going to be really fun to get rid of my false ego and to give up this core tendency. And then for the first couple of weeks, he says, look at all these devotees, they're all in Maya, they don't really know as much as me, right? And then he says, and look at this one over, he's doing this and this one's doing that. That's the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He gives the name of the something, Utsahan or something, as an anarta, the enthusiasm of the little baby, basically, the spiritual baby. You know everything. In your first 6 months of devotee, you know everything, more than everyone. But then later on, after one's more mature, one sees the insignificance of what he knows. So one has to continue, because it's the right thing, and cherish the realizations that Krishna has given you, and take shelter of the holy names and the deities and the devotees like that.
And the parampara
and the gurus and the Bhagavatam and the Dham. These are our shelters. And gradually it's like when it's like cleaning the mirror, the Teto Darpana Marjanam. There's a mile and a half of dust, and we've started to clean. So if we stop cleaning, what's the benefit? But it's can be done very quickly, but it sometimes takes some time.
It's not a question that
Is that all right on that question?
Yes, certainly. Wonderful. Thank you. But then someone sees, oh, this is my real tendency, so therefore I have to facilitate it to some degree. Whereas some other devotee, he decides, I can't facilitate it at all, I have to get rid of it. This tendency to turn away.
Yeah, so we don't criticize. The devotees who say, I have this problem and I'm not strong enough to just completely full surrender to Krishna, so let me use my problem in such a way that it will get me out. In other words, let me engage my nature in such a way.
That would seem then that the ability for pure devotional service is dependent on some material circumstance. Because someone who isn't able, doesn't have the strength to surrender completely.
No. Doesn't seem like we should see like that, because if one fully takes shelter of the holy names, then all obstacles can be surmounted. But the problem is that we don't take full shelter of the holy names and the guru, etc. So therefore we have to deal more with our conditioned nature. But it's not, when the conditioned nature comes up, it's not good to get discouraged. Rather, what we should do is get humble. But rather than getting humble, we get discouraged because we don't like the feeling of eating our own words, eating our pride. It never tastes good.
The thing is, we don't want to take complete shelter because we know if we take complete shelter, we have reservations of enjoyment and our desires fulfillment, and we do not want to take complete shelter. Because we know that we'll be crushed and we don't want to be crushed.
Why do we know we'll be crushed? If we take shelter of Krishna, we'll be crushed, or if we don't take shelter of Krishna, we'll be crushed. It seems like either way we're going to be crushed sometimes, doesn't it? What are you saying, monkey fool?
Maybe I haven't said it properly. I mean, I don't want to take the shelter of my guru completely because I have reservations.
Yeah. So
because I know that he will put me out, and I don't want to be put out.
So that means insincerity.
Yeah, that's the thing, you see. I mean, insincerity due to that core condition, you see. Because I still have that such a core, strong condition for millions of.
But what is the core desire is, yes, that we want to enjoy.
Yes,
that
right.
We want to be the center.
And sometimes we also feel, oh, I should get out of this because I feel miserable. But
yeah.
I still do not want to get,
yeah,
out of it.
I one time, in this regard, one time it was a very strong realization that I had, that I was looking at some book or something, and I realized, you know, there's one picture of Krishna with all the cows. Now, I don't remember, but there's a picture where there's, it's like full of, the whole picture is full of cows, and Krishna's there with his cowherd boyfriends. And I looked at that picture, and I saw there's like billions of cows. And I realized that in the spiritual world, there's like billions of living entities serving Krishna. And all Mother Yasoda is there, and Radharani is there, and Nanda Maharaj is there, and Sudam, Sridam, Subal. All the top positions are filled. And I'm trying to go back to Godhead, and I'm lucky if I get anything to do. If I go back there, you know, I'm not going to have a big position. I'm lucky if I'm, you know, there's billions of cows in this picture. And I'm thinking, even, you know, what am I going to do when I get there? What happens if, you know, I have to make garlands forever or something like that? And I thought, maybe I'm in the wrong movement.
If I go there, reach there.
Well, I'm gonna be an insignificant soul. I didn't, and I, you know, and I questioned whether, you know, is it worthwhile all this work, and then you're gonna become an insignificant servant of Krishna? Of course, there's illusion in that, you know. But when that thought did flash through my mind, and I was shocked, but I understood why, because the core, as you're calling it, the core, the basis of my being in the material world hasn't been there. I'm inherently a servant of Krishna. That's who I am. There's no understanding the soul, the self, without understanding our relationship with Krishna. Like you can't understand the finger without understanding its relationship to the body. That's who we are. But it's, yeah.
So in that, from that point of view, when we preach to new people, it would be really foolish to say when you're in the spiritual world, you might be the parent of Krishna.
they'll say, ah, that's for the birds.
So to talk like that is quite...
Well, you might be a parrot of Krishna when you go to the spiritual world. Krishna also has dogs too, you know that?
Do the dogs think?
Huh? Yeah, they think, rum, rum, rum.
Do they not have any sort of more human-like personal qualities?
Oh, they have completely, yeah, they're not like...